Well, greetings and salutations, one and all. Back again to the Super View Show's Mixed Bag, coming to you live once again from many, many, many caves. As always, I'm joined by the esteemed, elaborate, super awesome panel of panelists here at the Super View Show. Bill, how are you doing tonight?
I am doing good, my good man. How are you?
Doing fantastic. And our guy who came up with our topic for tonight, Justin, what do you got? How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing pretty good. Pretty excited for tonight because, in the words of Monty Python, Bill.
Get on with it! For something completely different.
There we go. Okay, All right.
We got a fun topic for you tonight. Normally, Bill gives out the topic, but Justin picked out a really good topic for us. So what exactly were we doing tonight?
So, who here went out to go see Snow White?
I didn't.
I didn't.
Not me either, yeah.
And guess what? Not a lot of people in this country end up going see Snow White.
Mm.
It is what we would call in the business a flop.
So looks like if Snow White's prince was money, it wasn't coming someday, was it, Justin?
Oof.
Oh.
That's rough.
Oh, that was a bad joke, was it?
So...
You're good, but go on.
In honor of the Disney live-action remake starting to really fade in popularity and success, it's time to take a look at these properties and see what if we brought this back to the original source material and made it closer to that than they are the Disney movies. Now, what we're going to be doing tonight is we're going to be pitching three movies. You see it all three fingers? Okay, good.
Yep.
All right.
The balloons.
Balloons!
What?
Our software we use.
Okay.
Justin, your birthday is coming up, so that was appropriate.
Happy birthday.
I will have to remember that for a couple of weeks from now. Anyways.
What do you got there?
So we are going to be coming up with three movie ideas tonight based on the Disney library of what they could possibly do to make a successful live-action adaptation by celebrating the original source material.
Yes, kind of a loaded topic, but I think it's going to pay off well.
And, like, let me tell you, this was like trying to do a screenplay, a book report, and you know what? Can we just give the spoilers now? None of us read the books. There's this great thing. It's called the internet. Isn't the internet great, Justin?
Yep.
Who doesn't
love the internet? SparkNotes exists.
And isn't it great?
It's fantastic.
Yep. We did about as much research as a standard Disney live action screenwriter.
Ooh.
Yeah, I went there.
So what we're going to do is we're going to pretend like we are pitching our ideas to the mouse.
Disney itself.
That's right.
So
one of us is going to be screenwriter guy, and two of us is going to be Bob Iger and Alan Horn.
And so one of us is going to be the screenwriter, the other two is going to be like the execs. And you know what? When Justin pitched this idea, I was a little apprehensive because I was trying to get this together. But I'm thinking this is going to be fun.
Yeah, something we haven't had in a long time on here is something this.
Long time? We've never done this before.
It's going to be interesting. It's going to require a little bit of creative curveballs. But, Bill, you know how to pitch, right?
Batter up.
All right. Fastball. Curveball. Wait, two-seam fastball. Four-seam fastball. Changeup. Wrong pitch, right?
All right, let's play ball.
Let's play ball, kids. All right, here we go.
Play ball. All right. You know, Justin, since this was your brilliant idea, we're going to let you go first.
Okay. So.
Okay, Mr. Favaro.
All right. So. All right.
You got some things you'd like to pitch for us today, don't you?
What do you got?
Yes, sir, I do. So. I know that your adaptation of The Little Mermaid, you tried to bring diversity to the table, but when it all came together, you really didn't change all that much about the original story. And when it comes to remaking a movie, either you bring something new to the table or you don't remake it. So, let's do The Little Mermaid closer to the Hans Christian Andersen fairy tale.
Okay, first question. Are we going to keep any elements of the Disney movie in this?
Oh, absolutely. I envision the first, I would say, half of the movie is basically the Disney movie.
Okay.
But then once Ariel makes the deal with the Sea Witch, I think that's when we can have a fun deviation. And I think this could be a fun way to explore how I'm gathering my thoughts again.
Take your time, Dr. Favaro.
Take your time.
Okay. So, this gives us the opportunity to explore the pain of conformity, especially with women.
Okay.
And I think there's no better director out there to do that right now than Coralie Fagot.
Okay.
Also known as the director of The Substance.
Ooh, okay.
Interesting.
Right. Yeah, very interesting. Okay.
I can see it now. Like, when Ariel makes the deal with the Sea Witch and becomes human, she has a period of time where she has to woo the prince. Or she will die.
Ooh, okay, okay.
Here's the thing. Every step she makes on dry land is searing agony. Picture daggers stabbing your feet with every step you make.
Ooh, okay, ooh, okay.
Yeah, that was in the book.
You have our attention. What else you got?
Now, at first, it seems like Ariel's going to win the prince's favor, but in the circumstance of mistaken identity, the prince chooses another woman to marry, thinking that that woman was the woman that saved him in the beginning of the story.
Yes, okay. That was in the book. That was in the book, wasn't it, Mr. Favaro?
It was in the book, yes.
Okay, all righty.
And how powerful, how tragic it would be for this young lady trying to change for this prince, and the prince just brushes her off in favor of another person. How changing yourself for another person is just never worth it. And isn't that a lesson that Disney would love to deliver to its wide-eyed audience?
Yes. So you're trying to say the messages of conformity.
How conformity is how conformity will lead to pain and suffering and is not worth your personal happiness.
Mm.
And so my question to you, I have a couple questions, is in the original Hans Christian Andersen novel,
mm-hmm.
the sea witch, who in the Disney adaptation is Ursula.
Yes.
In the book, the sea witch is sort of more of a neutral character. She's not really evil. She's more neutral. While Ursula is straight up evil. So, Justin, my question to you is, are you going to keep her more in contact with the book?
I think it could be fun to have a more neutral Ursula.
Or are you going to keep her more, or are you going to put her more evil, like in the Disney film? And as the, and my question is, with the woman that in the end, that the prince ends up marrying, is she just another woman, or is she Ursula disguised, like in the Disney movie?
No, we're not going to have it as Ursula in disguise. It's going to be an innocent woman who is none the wiser of who Ariel is. Maybe have a striking resemblance to Ariel.
Okay.
Because what I'm going to have happen is, as in the book, Ariel's sister is going to make another deal with the witch in turn of a dagger to kill the prince and his bride to restore her fins before she dies.
Yeah, that is. And
when she can't bring herself to do it, she throws herself off the ship and turns into sea foam into the sea.
Yes, just like in the book. Well, here's the thing. Sorry, I got a lot of questions here. My associate here has been pretty quiet, so you know what? I'm going to let him
answer. Well, obviously he's in awe of how brilliant this is going to be and how much money this is going to make for the House of Mouse.
I'm just taking it all in, baby. I'm just trying to see how much money we can make in the box.
Are we going to keep the characters from the... Or are we going to keep, like, some of the side characters from the Disney movie? Like, are we going to keep Flounder and Sebastian and...
Oh, good question.
I mean, I think you would kind of have to in the beginning. Like I said, the first half or so, I think, would be very similar in style and structure to the original Disney film. Once we get to the sea witch, that's when things start to change. That's when we probably lose Flounder. But also, we are upping the roles of the sisters in this.
Because they did have more of a role in the book.
Exactly. So.
Fair enough. Okay.
See, I did my homework.
We could, in essence, replace Flounder and Sebastian with the sisters. In some senses, we could include both. Now, I think removing Flounder and Sebastian would save us on special effects.
Ooh, that's a good point from a budgeting standpoint, too. I like that, too. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Because keep in mind, we did lose money on the last Little Mermaid we did. Ooh, we lost about $5 million.
It's only $5 million, but still, that's $5 million out of our pockets.
Yes, it is.
Exactly, sir.
So I think with this, I think we should really look at reducing some of the cost. Now, that's going to be hard to do, I understand, because we are doing The Little Mermaid. A good half of this movie is going to be taking place under the sea.
Just, darling, it's better. Down where it's wetter.
Under the sea.
But thank you for me.
So, obviously, we're going to have to spend quite a bit of money on visual effects. But I think we could also look at if we go for maybe some lesser known ensemble players rather than A-list actors.
Well, I have two questions before you go for that, if that's okay.
Go ahead, sure. Bill. Go ahead.
Question one is in the book when the Sea Witch takes away Ariel's voice, it's not like in the Disney film, which where Ursula does the magic potion and boom, no voice. In the book, they literally cut out Ariel's tongue. How are we going to, are you going to go more with what Ursula did? Or are you going to do the original thing and literally cut out her tongue? Because, you know, Mr. Favara, we kind of got an image to maintain here.
I have a follow-up question with that too, actually, because if you think about it, what rating are we going for? We're going for PG, or we're going to go PG-13 and limit our demographic too.
So here's where things are going to get interesting. I'm envisioning an R rating for this.
Really? So you're going to cut out her tongue?
So what if we go through one of our subsidiaries to release this movie?
Okay.
Like a New Line Cinema or like a, no, not New Line, I'm sorry.
Like what if we revive Touchstone or even put this under 20th Century Studios or
okay. I mean, we do own Fox, so
we do own Fox, yes.
Yes.
You that know can work. We could in essence launch a new franchise of films that takes what we built and remove the gloss, remove that Disney gloss that we created all those years ago. And since it won't be under the Walt Disney banner, it won't hurt our image.
Okay.
Fair point. And, but it's still our character, though.
With the Disney gloss, though, one thing I want to ask you if you're going to keep, are you going to keep the music?
Oh, yeah. Good question.
Like, because you know by Alan, who, you know, and by Howard, God rest his soul, are, you know, the songs like... you know, Part of Your World, Under the Sea, Poor Unfortunate Souls, Kiss the Girl. Which of those, which songs are you going to keep? And which songs are you thinking about axing? Or would you want to get Alan and someone to write another song or two? Or are you thinking about getting someone else? Or do you want to...
So I am pretty hard on the first half having the songs, second half no songs.
So you will keep the Trident song, Part of Your World, and Under the Sea.
Maybe Poor Unfortunate Souls.
Okay, so no Kiss the Girl.
No.
Okay.
So why did you want to ask that one?
Because, like I said, once the deal is done with Ursula...
We're now at the Hans Christian Andersen portion of the movie.
Exactly. Okay. So that's when things are going to take a turn. That's when we're going to get the Corley forget about of it all.
So, but now I'm sorry to hear. So are you cutting her tongue out or nah?
Oh yeah. We're cutting her tongue out.
And we're going to show it, aren't we?
We're showing blood.
Wow. Okay.
And we're going to go a little further with the pain she's in when she walks on land.
So what are you planning on showing?
We're going to have a little bit of body horror with this, where her skin will actually blister as she walks. So you'll see her legs will start getting more and more
blistered and more beat up.
Yeah, and it's that's where I'm going with the pain of conformity, is how much she's going through in order to change herself to win over the prince's approval.
Interesting. Okay.
And I want Coralie Faget, because of her work from the substance, how she can sprinkle in that satire and delivers us something truly unforgettable.
Okay.
And you think that her creative vision could bring your vision of a Little Mermaid to life?
I think that we can make this movie on a lower budget than we made the previous movie. I think we can at least cut the budget in half.
Okay. Really? Okay.
All right. Now, who do you want in this movie?
Who do you see as Little Mermaid, the prince, etc.?
So I was thinking this young woman. She was recently in the Wednesday television show. Her name is Emma Myers.
Okay.
I think she has a very charismatic presence, very bubbly, and I think that's important for Ariel's character in the beginning. And I don't know, I think there's a hidden pain to her too, which will really come into play later down.
Okay, like, if she does, you know, can she sing now? Like, you know, if you're keeping the song part of your world, she's gonna have to sing. Do you want her, or are we gonna get a dub, or what are we gonna
do? I'm sure we can afford singing lessons for her if she can. I mean, we're saving a ton of money in other areas, so I think we can splurge a little bit on singing lessons.
Okay. I'm sorry, Mr. Mahoney, go right ahead.
I was about to say, I mean, well, how much would we pay for marketing? Because, you know, I only bring this up because our Marvel department I bring this up because Sony, one of our business rivals / in the movie industry, did this in 2014 or 2013 with The Amazing Spider-Man 2. And they spent the same exact amount of money they spent to make the movie. They may have spent marketing the movie. I believe they spent at least $400 million combined with the budget and paying the actors and everything and marketing as well. And it did. It kind of flopped on their head a little bit because the movie was received very mixed and not well. How do you see the marketing playing out with our budget here?
So I envision a $100 million budget and $65 million in P&A.
So $165 million, or just $100 million that includes the
so $165 million
total
combined.
Okay, and so for an R-rated movie, we're gonna have $165 million budget. And do you think that this new envisionment of Little Mermaid would drag people to assuming we make a good product and maybe we would put out really good trailers? Do you think that most people would flock to the theater? Do you think might people, or the, because let's face it, not everyone in the country or the world would want to go see an R-rated Disney movie. I mean,
if this is going to be R-rated, we can't market this to 8-year-old girls. We can't do it.
It's like the Winnie the Pooh situation all over again with Blood and Honey. I know that wasn't necessarily us, but still. So
I feel like this would be an interesting movie for those who grew up with the original movie.
Okay.
So okay. We can market it to their nostalgia.
Okay.
Okay.
So maybe that, have some voice cameos from the original cast.
Okay.
Like Jodie Benson.
Yes.
And
she's still on our payroll, right?
I'm sure she is.
Yeah, she is. And maybe we can use some archive footage of Pat Carroll, God rest her soul, and maybe some archive footage of Samuel E. Wright. Pat Carroll, who did the original Ursula, and Samuel E. Wright, who did the original Sebastian. Well, who do we want playing the Sea Witch?
Good question. Who do you got? Uma Thurman. I'm just kidding.
Catherine Hahn.
Okay.
Okay.
Actually, too funny.
You want a serious character? You don't want a funny character, right?
Yeah, we already kind of did funny with Melissa McCarthy.
Yeah, and that did not obviously go well. What are you thinking?
I'm thinking.
Well, my esteemed CFO or CEO of Disney, what do you think? Is this kind of promising, though, to pitch $165 million to an R-rated? I mean, to be fair, Deadpool just did that, and it worked out in our favor, but that's also Deadpool.
Well, here's the thing. Okay. Do we want to keep the song Poor Unfortunate Souls? Because here's the thing. If you want the Sea Witch to be more neutral, that's not really going to fit the tone of the movie. So do you want someone who's going to be more just who could just play the neutral, like the umpire, as we say in baseball? Or do you want someone who can be the villain?
Good question.
I feel like I want someone who knows how this is going to go. If you know what I mean. Like, she's seen this happen a million times before. She'll see it happen a million times again.
Oh, I have an idea.
Scarlett Johansson. I'm just kidding.
I have an idea.
Oh. You
got? We might have to splurge a little bit, though, if that's okay.
Uh-oh.
Judy Dench.
Judy Dench. Okay. Not my first pick, but I do like it.
Mr. Ferrara, what do you think?
I don't know if she'll do all that makeup again after Cats.
Ugh, Cats.
Ugh. Let's not talk about Cats.
Hey, the only good thing is we did do it.
There you go. So
who could we get to play the Sea Witch?
Let's see what Meryl Streep or Uma Thurman. I don't know. I'm just throwing names out there.
That's a little pricey.
How about what's her name? She was in the Wicked movie. Cynthia Erivo.
She's already in the Disney family too, so why not? Oh no, you said Wicked. I'm sorry. She could do it. I think she pulled off.
Yeah. How about Cynthia Erivo?
What do you think, Mr. Favaro?
She could be interesting. Maybe someone like Evangeline Lilly or...
Okay. Who played... Was it Angelina Jolie played Maleficent? Am I thinking of the right character? Right actress?
Yes. Yeah.
She might be a little pricey, though. She
might be a little bit too pricey for an R-rated Little Mermaid remake. I don't know. Good question. We could always come back to it. We could always come back to that question too.
Who do you have being the prince?
Yes, good question.
The prince, I could see basically any dashing young man playing.
Thanks, Timothy Chalamet.
Hey.
Well, he is popular right now.
Hey, people love Timothy Chalamet.
He wouldn't be too pricey either because he's still up and coming, no?
No, I don't think he
I think he got there.
Oh, well, maybe he did.
Okay, well, who could we?
Oh, gosh. Who was the guy from Game of Thrones who was in that Eternals movie?
Oh. Why am I drawing a blank on his name? I forgot.
Not Jon Snow, the other guy.
There's a thing called the internet. Let's look it up really quick. Game of Thrones. What was the character's name?
Icarus. Or at least that was his character in Eternals.
Let's see. Who played him?
I think he also played the Prince Charming in the Cinderella remake.
It was Richard Madden.
Yes.
There you go.
Sorry. He'd be my pick.
Okay.
All right, so good pick.
Who do we want if we're keeping Flounder and Sebastian? Who are we going to have them do the voice?
We can just hire voice actors for them.
Okay, yeah. Hey, for Sebastian to pay tribute to Samuel E. Wright, why don't we have, if we do Under the Sea, why don't we have his version play?
We could do that now. What do you think?
We would have to check with their estate.
True.
Okay. We'd
have to do that.
And who do you want playing the sisters? Just ensemble actors?
Yeah, we're going to have to do a casting call for them.
Okay.
That's fine.
What about Triton?
How about we get Nicolas Cage?
Okay.
Why not?
Ariel, you can't go.
Because he's Nicolas Cage. Why not? Boom.
But my concern is if we're going for a more serious tone, shouldn't we have a more serious actor?
I think Nicolas Cage should pull off a serious role now. Maybe he's done that.
Oh, he can pull it off.
It's just a matter of how he does it.
Okay, so this film will not be poor or unfortunate. I'll tell you that. I think we can make this work. Mr. Mahoney, what do you think?
I think it has a lot of potential, and I think we should greenlight it. What do you say?
All right. I agree. Other stuff we can talk down the road.
Yeah,
Mr. Favaro, you'll be getting your money soon.
Yes.
All right.
There you go.
One green light.
Check.
Okay. Right.
Next movie.
Can I go next?
Sure, go right ahead.
All right, cool. So for those of you keeping track at home, if I can pull it up one sec. My pick for our discussion tonight for reimagining a Disney live action remake of a classic story would be the following. Let me just share my screen for a sec too. For those of you who watch this live, good for you. Tarzan from 1999. I have always been a fan of the story. even though the original source material is drastically different than the 1999 direct home video classic that we all, that a lot of people in our generation know about.
It wasn't direct to video. It did get a theatrical release.
Yeah, it got theatrically released.
Thank you. I actually did not realize that when I was doing my research, it said direct to video. But here's my pitch to you, Disney bosses.
Okay.
I even wrote out a little bit of a little pitch for you too. Here we go. So, my pitch to Disney to do a Tarzan remake is the following. I even wrote out a little preamble too. Hear me out for a sec. The 1999 animated classic Tarzan has remained as one of Disney Studios' most beloved films, and it has a great soundtrack by Phil Collins. It has a lot of emotional development to it, and it is still a spectacle. It's still a spectacle in the animated form. But imagine those swings. Imagine the swing of vines going from tree to tree on the big screen in live action. Literally, King of the Jungle. Live on the big screen. It would have CGI elements. It would have at least... It'd be PG-13. We'd make it PG-13 because there's some elements here and there with Tarzan and Jane.
And
other things like that too. I mean, let's be real. At the same time, it'll have plenty of other elements too. Just like the Planet of the... Because one of my biggest things was having the Planet of the Apes films as an influence on this, as far as motion capture goes. Hear me out for a sec. The way that we had Andy Serkis do Caesar, picture that, but with not necessarily Tarzan, but with other apes-like characters in the movie as well. Just think about that for a sec. I mean, we're calling for a pretty big budget here, which for a PG-13 live-action Tarzan remake, which I think would be really good.
So are the apes going to be walking on two legs or?
No, they would still walk on, what do you call it? The apes would be walking on all fours. That sounds really derogatory, but they would not be like the way, I'm sorry, I hate to say it like that, but it's true. The Tarzan apes would not be walking like apes from the Planet of the Apes movies. They would walk as if they're actual gorillas in a zoo or in the jungle. They're not going to actually have, like, they're not going to walk on 2 feet. They're going to walk on their back feet with their paws out too, if that makes sense. So it would be as close to the original setting as you could get with the apes, if that makes sense, my dear CEOs. I do have a cast lined up too for the certain characters too, if that's okay. This is my personal prediction and my belief on who could play what.
Well, who do you want to direct?
Well, I'm drawing a blank already. I have three people in mind that could probably fit this specific style of Tarzan. I was thinking either I've narrowed in, out of all the directors in Hollywood that have great success, I narrowed it into these three. John Favreau, our dear Disney friend who directed Iron Man 2.
He can't do that one. He's too busy with Mandalorian Grogu right now.
Fair enough. Okay. My second one was, well, if you want to talk about the apes, would be Matt Reeves, the guy who did the Batman. He also did he did Dawn of the Planet of the Apes too. I mean, he knows motion capture. He knows how to direct emotional story elements too with his capabilities of directing dark stories, but he could also direct action pretty well too. I like Matt Reeves a lot as a pick. That's just me though. My other one, he might be too big of a name, but picture this coming from Walt Disney Studios, directed Tarzan coming summer 2027, directed by James Cameron. You knew it was coming. Think about that. Think about his visual style of directing. Can you imagine James Cameron directing Tarzan?
I can imagine how expensive it would be.
It would be very expensive.
Expensive!
The magic words.
Mr. Favaro, I don't know if we could keep. What do you think? This sounds super expensive.
Allow me to explain though why.
Dude,
I chose...
we're hemorrhaging money here. Are we hemorrhaging money, Mr. Favaro, or am I just exaggerating?
However, here's my defense for James Cameron. Because he directed two of the most highest grossing movies of all time, and I believe this would be a $1 billion film if he directed. Not just because he directed it, but because his films are typically epic films. And for Tarzan, you got to have some elements of like the jungle, and you got to have elements of like the CGI at its finest. You know, can you imagine James Cameron pulling off a Tarzan live action film with a budget of, I have roughly $300 million. That's including marketing though. And my esteemed CEO is already saying no.
No. You're hitting your head. Wow, we're already getting, okay. You know what, Mr. Favaro, I say we keep an open mind. What do you think? Let's continue to hear what else he has to say.
Yes, I do have a cast lined up too, if that's okay.
Okay, let's hear the cast.
Okay, hear me out for a sec. For Tarzan, this is just my personal opinion. I think he did a very good job at picking up in specifically Dune Part 2, but also in the Elvis movies, Austin Butler. He's kind of got the physique. He could pull it off like the skinniness, but also if you get him built up a little bit, he could be more jacked. He could pull off Tarzan, in my opinion, Austin Butler. He's not a major league actor fully, but you could pay him a good salary to do it. Jane Porter would be Anya Taylor-Joy from The Queen's Gambit and Furiosa.
I actually don't think that those are bad choices, Mr. Favaro. What do you think?
What do you think, Mr. Favaro?
Honestly, those choices could work. Who are you envisioning for Clayton?
Yes, who are you envisioning for Clayton?
So you're going to think that he's already been in the Tarzan world, but Alexander Skarsgård from The Northman and the Tarzan 2016 film.
You're right.
How about, could we see Alexander Skarsgård as Clayton? I think so. What do you think about that? And the rest,
maybe.
Okay, and hear me out for a second. And also, we would also have one other main actor as a regular, the villain of Professor Archimedes. Ralph Fiennes as Professor Archimedes. He did Lord Voldemort so well. He was in Harry Potter for all those films. He also was in a couple of the James Bond movies. He can pull off serious and is an Academy level actor too. Now, I do have some motion capture / voice actor possibilities for the apes, if that's okay.
Let's hear it.
Okay. Who else would you go for? I'm going to butcher his name, but Kirchak? And Idris Elba. Idris Elba, I think, could pull that off. And I think Viola Davis could pull off Kala. And again, this is an emotion capture CGI voice role, as well as for Turk, Awkwafina from Shang-Chi. Awkwafina. I'm thinking of the water brand as I'm saying it. Sorry about that. From Shang-Chi and the Little Mermaid, who we just talked about. And Tantor could be – this is just one that I thought about. That episode. Who could really pull this off well with a motion capture? But Keenan Michael Key.
Oh, my God.
Can you imagine that for 1 second? Just seriously, think about that for a second. Tell me how that would not work. And the budget – sorry, I lied. It wouldn't be $300 million with James Cameron directing it. It'd be about –
it'd be $500 million.
It'd be $500 million. I need half $1 billion to make this movie. It would be five parts of Tarzan.
And let me guess, Tarzan 2, Electric Boogaloo coming soon.
What do you got?
How much are you going to be spending on visual effects?
Well, obviously, this given that the nature of the jungle and the CGI and stuff, I would say VX wise, you're probably looking at. I mean, if you look at recent Disney films too that we've done in the past, Lion King, their budgets were because of a visual effects, high end VFX stuff. Was the budget for Lion King was $260 million, and the Jungle Book was $175 million. So honestly, you're probably looking at a pretty high budget of a higher end budget. I shouldn't say super high. I would say a higher end budget of maybe about capping at $200 million. And it's a PG-13. You don't go R with it. You just keep it PG-13 because of the elements of the fighting and the character development between Tarzan and between the apes and Jane and all this stuff and all these other characters.
Listen. James Cameron's name doesn't guarantee a hit. Just look at what happened with Terminator Dark Fate.
True. Well, he didn't direct though, right? No, he didn't.
Yeah, and listen, I'm gonna be
honest. No, but he did produce and contributed to the story.
I'm gonna be honest with you, Mr. Mahoney. I'm gonna be straight up honest with you.
This would not work.
I feel like you're thinking more on spectacle than you are on story.
That's a fair point.
Mr. Favaro, am I correct or am I wrong?
That's why
I mean, how are you differentiating from the 1999 version?
And are you staying close to the source material?
Well, listen, I was going to bring that up. I'm glad you brought that up, good sir. The source material is originally from a 1912 novel of the first ever Tarzan of the Apes series. I have it in my back. I still ready to go too. Hear me out for a second. Tarzan would be like obviously like the plot. It takes place in the continent of Africa and the jungles out there, of course. If you want to be technical, the book itself had a lot of really, really racist comments about the book, about it's a white guy and a black, you know, all that. I'm not going to get into the specifics of it, but yeah, there's some racism themes there. There's some hereditary themes in the original book. There's even some, like the thought of like civilization and escapism in the book. So you'd have to probably eliminate some of that for today's 2020s American and worldwide society. You have to get rid of a lot of it. Like you'd have to get rid of like the racist,
of course,
deal to it. Of course, that's a given. You'd have to also make sure civilization is like a part of it, but not fully. Like you know, because for those who don't know, Tarzan is about a guy who was raised by apes in the jungles of Africa. But he's a white man who's like really ripped and he's super strong and all that stuff. So, but still, I believe that it has the potential to, if you can modernize the story, and I don't mean modernize meaning, oh, let's modernize the story and let's do this. No, I mean, let's take the story of Tarzan, take out all the garbage, I shouldn't say garbage, but take out the elements of like racism or anti this or that, and modernize it with a nice Disney feel to it. You have a solid PG-13 rating there too. It's not going to go R, but you have a PG-13 rating for it. And I think if you remove those other elements from that were dated from the early 1900s, it could work out well. But that's just me.
Okay. My next question about the 1990, keeping this to the 1999 music wise, do you want to keep the songs by Phil Collins?
I would say yes, but I would say let's have someone cover the Phil Collins song. So Phil Collins, as old as he is, I don't think him doing it would be the best idea. We could probably have people cover his songs, though. Keep the same songs. Just have like Adele or SZA or I'm butchering her name.
Do we want to have them play like in the movie, have the songs play in the background? Do you want to have the characters actually sing them?
Me personally, my vision of Tarzan, I don't want to see them sing it. I don't want to see them. I mean, unless it's like Tarzan or Jane singing, that's a different story. I don't want to see, like apes singing, you know what I mean? Or like the bare necessities, you know, I don't want like, and that's the Jungle Book.
I am the shoo-ba-doo-ba-doo, boo-boo-boo, bop-bop-bop-bop-bop.
I mean, you could, but it wouldn't be as realistic as like having just regular ASB apes, if that makes sense.
Okay. Or are we going to have CGI apes for this one?
Yes. We're going to have motion capture CGI
apes. Mr. Favaro, is that going to be more money?
Well, Motion capture, not CGI. Well, okay. CGI motion capture.
That is CGI.
Okay, there you go. See? Problem solved.
Hey, you know, for the trash and camp, like, bop it up, shoo-ba-doo. Why don't we have Pentatonix do it?
That could work, actually.
Okay, so anything else you want to pitch to us?
I'm going to say... I'm gonna look at my notes here for a second. I think this is the story's ripe to be told. I think this it's time we've done Lion King over and over again. We've done live action versions of Little Mermaid or other properties. Let's bring Tarzan back to I could see it now. Tarzan swinging from vine to vine and having the camera pan back and forth between the. I could see it all happening right before my eyes, truthfully. But yeah. I could see this working.
Do you think this could be a big moneymaker?
I do. I think the story is ripe enough to do so. I think the story is actually a really strong story, actually, too. It's one that I feel like people forget about, truthfully, sir. I feel like people forget about Tarzan, Lord of the Apes, the Disney classic from 1999. I think that if they have like other stories... I think that if we revitalize the property, we do it right, and we have a solid director like a Matt Reeves or even a James Cameron might be a little bit too extreme, but someone like that, hell, you know, even throw like J.J. Abrams in there, like there'd be lens flares everywhere. But hey, why not? So
okay, no, all right,
I'm joking about J.J. Abrams, but still,
Mr. Favara, what are your thoughts
for Tarzan?
My thoughts is we're going to be bankrupt if we greenlight this.
Yeah, this is, sounds like you're putting more over spectacle than story here.
Well, I mean, to be fair, most of the Terminator films are. No, I'm just kidding.
Unless you could get someone more affordable.
Spielberg.
That'll permanently bankrupt us, won't it, sir?
No. Mr. Favaro? No, he wouldn't go crazy.
All right, you know, I'm going to let you go first, Justin.
Guillermo del Toro.
Yeah.
Guillermo del Toro should do it.
The way you pitch this movie is you are just throwing money at... You're just throwing money at it and hoping it'll make it good. Where it's... We are trying to... find ways to make a hit as cost effective as possible.
Yeah, I totally agree. Like, I think you have some interesting ideas, but
mm-hmm.
This sounds incoherent. And it's just, I feel like we're bleeding from these live-action remakes here, people. We're bleeding, are we, Mr. Favaro?
Yes, we are.
And you're basically saying, let's take $200 million and just throw it at it.
Which,
and that'll make it
which we are going to run out of. Let's be honest.
James Cameron.
And... you are basically saying, let's take $200 million and throw it at this problem. But that's not going to make the problem go away.
I'm the problem. It's me.
So, yeah, I'm going to have to say no.
Oh, man.
Yeah, I'm going to have to pass on this one.
I was really banking on you guys saying yes, because I really want to have my Tarzan thing go. Anyways.
Maybe if you could give us a more cost-effective version, we'll think about it. But this is just way too expensive. Okay, so one green light, one red light. It looks like I'm the tiebreaker, aren't I, Justin and JT?
Yes, you are.
Okay.
All right. So Bill is now going to try and do his pitch to Disney. So, Bill, what do you got for your pitch to Disney?
Okay, my pitch is going to be a live-action remake of... Victor Hugo's 1831 novel, The Hunchback of Notre Dame. Now, what I am wanting to do is I want to have this as a basically show the best of both worlds. You know what I mean? Okay. I want to have a combination of the 1996 animated Disney movie, which is one of my favorite Disney movies, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
But have elements of the book. And, you know, while I was doing research for this, I was thinking, what can we do? And the thing is, I actually found a musical version of this film that I'm borrowing elements of. A stage musical. Didn't make it to Broadway, unfortunately. I'm not starting off good, am I? But anyway, but, you know, it's basically the Victor Hugo story with Disney music. With the Disney music, and has elements of the Disney movie in there. Like, for instance, I want to... Okay, we are going to have the villain that everyone loves, and that is Frollo. But there's going to be some changes. Unlike the book... Unlike the movie... Okay, in the movie, Frollo is... portrayed as the epitome of evil. In the book, he's kind of still the bad guy, but he's not as ruthless. So right. We're going to try to tone Frollo down a little bit. And we are going to keep him as Archdeacon. And instead, in the Disney movie, when they made him the judge.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And here's why. Because his lust for Esmeralda, him as a Catholic priest who's sworn to a life of celibacy, I think that's going to torture him even more. Okay, no objections so far. It looks like we're doing pretty good.
You're doing good. Keep it up.
Okay. And we are going to keep Quasimodo, of course. He is the hunchback.
Right.
But this is how I want to have the founding story. Because in the and this really shows Frollo's character. In the movie, Frollo gets Quasimodo after he thinks Quasimodo's mother is stealing goods.
Mm-hmm.
And when he snatches the baby, what he thinks are stolen goods, but is actually baby Quasimodo, and the mom dies of a broken neck, he looks as just a baby, a monster. And he's going to drown, and he's basically going to throw it down a well and drown an infant. Yeah, I don't think the big man upstairs is going to look too kindly on that.
No.
Yeah. So, and then the Archdeacon in the Disney movie says, as a penance, you must raise the child as your own. And in the movie, he kind of really doesn't care about Quasimodo. He's just doing it to check a box off.
Right.
Well, yep. In the book, Frollo, who is the Archdeacon, when he's a priest, you know, because he has more sympathy for Quasimodo because he helped take care of his brother, of Frollo's brother, because his parents both were died by the plague.
Mm-hmm.
And he found Quasimodo on the Foundling bed of Notre Dame. His mother abandoned him, just like in the book. And he names him Quasimodo not because it means half-formed, but because they found him on Quasimodo Sunday, which back then was the Sunday after Easter.
Right.
So... having that element, but in the version of the stage show that I was telling you about, here's the twist we're going to use. We show a little bit of young Frollo fighting with his brother Jahan, because Frollo is studying to be a priest and Jahan just likes to party, and they go their separate ways. And then years later, when Frollo's a priest, he's called to administer last rites to someone, and it ends up being his brother Jahan. Mm. And his brother asks him a favor. It turns out that Jahan had a baby with a gypsy girl. And the baby is, guess who?
Esmeralda.
No, it's Quasimodo.
Oh.
And when when Frollo finds out that it's half gypsy, he takes a knife and you think we were going to escape the infanticide? No, we're not. He's going to try to kill, but Jahan stops him and says, please care for my child. And Frollo puts the knife down and looks at the baby and says, this child is my cross to bear. And we do have Frollo more as, I don't want to say he's a complete good guy, but he's more, Justin, help me out here. He's more
anti-heroic.
He's more anti-heroish. And yes, Quasimodo still is in the bell tower. Because fundamentals. Now, he is still isolated, but Frollo is more sympathetic to him than in the, because he feels it's kind of like he's doing like he did in the movie, that he's crossing off a box, but he's doing it more because he's doing this to fulfill a promise to his younger brother who died.
Mm-hmm.
Any questions so far? Or
no, I'm following it.
I'm following.
Okay. So then here are the, like, one of the elements of the book we're going to keep. Okay, well, we're going to twist it a little bit. Quasimodo is forbidden from going to the Festival of Fools.
Mm-hmm.
Both in the book and the movie. Quasimodo sneaks out, just like in the movie. And guess who he bumps into?
A judge.
He bumps into Archdeacon Frollo. Frollo mad at him. He said, makes him a deal. Gives him rope and says, go get the gypsy girl Esmeralda. Which was in the book, by the way. That Frollo sent Quasimodo to kidnap Esmeralda.
Hmm.
That was in the book. But he's so stunned by her beauty, he just doesn't do it. And then he's still crowned the king of the fools, and crowd turns on him, and he's getting whipped and everything, and Frollo doesn't help him to teach him a lesson.
Hmm.
And yeah, there is still the love story with Esmeralda. But like here, the other elements I want to keep from that combine both the book and the movie is Captain Phoebus. Because in the book, Captain Phoebus is basically the bad guy.
Mm.
But in the animated movie, he's a shining armor. So knight in shining armor. So why don't we keep him as the knight in shining armor, but we still have some half of his baggage from the book. Like he's a philanderer, he's a womanizer, he's actually engaged to his first cousin. Okay, when it comes to the fiance, we're taking the first cousin part out. We are taking that out. We are taking that out. We have limits.
Fair enough.
But we are going to keep the fiance, and we're going to keep Esmeralda, and we're going to have Phoebus have an affair with Esmeralda.
Hmm.
Cheating on his wife. Fiance. And you know, there are going to be, you know, there are going to be things like, I'm imagining this having this be PG-13 at the very least.
Hmm.
At the very least, PG-13.
Okay.
Because there are, and of course, the ending. I'm going to do something very balls to the wall here. I'm doing the full ending of the book.
Ooh.
For those of you who don't know how the book ends, the Frollo ends up killing Esmeralda. Quasimodo, while angry, he takes Frollo and throws him off the building. And then years later, oh yeah, because I want to add something here. Phoebus's fiance actually told Frollo where Esmeralda was hiding. So Phoebus isn't happy with his fiance, and guess how that ends? In the book, Phoebus just sucks it up and ends up marrying her. But in the movie, guess what?
What?
You might want to cancel your wedding gifts, folks. You might want to cancel that. Guess what happened to Phoebus's poor fiance, Justin? But then anyway, like in the book, after they die, it says that Quasimodo isn't seen again. And then years later, gravediggers find Esmeralda's grave and find a hunched over skeleton holding her skeleton. Saying that he basically got down to the body and curled up with her dead body. And here's, okay. Now you're, now I know what you all want to know. Guess what characters you're thinking it, whether we're going to keep them or not.
The gargoyles?
We're most likely not going to keep them. If we are, we're thinking about maybe having them all in his imagination, like Doug Walker suggested in his Disney-cember video, instead of having them actually be shown.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if we do keep them, maybe have them in his imagination. I don't know what you would say to that.
I would say remove them all together.
You know, and I was thinking about that too, because, you know, I was thinking if we were going to keep them, have them in his imagination, but maybe them out would be... Yeah. But here's the other thing. Okay. We are keeping most of the music. And because the music is absolutely fantastic. But if we're going to take out the gargoyles or just minimize them, we're going to take out the song "I Like You."
Yeah.
I just think it just really dampens the mood of the... Well, not dampens. It just destroys... It kind of kills the tone of the movie, you know? Because you know they just put the gargoyles in the movie to make it more, you know, kid-friendly.
Yeah.
And we're going to try to market this more towards an adult audience. But guess what musical number I would be so excited to see on screen live?
Hellfire.
Oh, yeah. We're going to have the Hooded Monks. We're doing it. We're not screwing around here. All right, so before I go on to casting it, okay, and we're also going to put in the song "Someday," which was taken out of the 1996 film and was released more as like an R&B single. We're going to put it in the movie and have Esmeralda sing it. And then we're going to have, after Frollo and Esmeralda die, we're going to have Quasimodo do a brief reprise medley of that, with the saw, with the line going, "Someday the world will be kinder." And also a brief replies of "Heaven's Light" with the line, "And as I ring these bells tonight, my cold dark tower seems so light."
Now tell me, who do you envision directing this?
Sam Mendes. Because here's why. This is someone who has experience, because this is basically a theatrical show.
Yeah.
And Sam Mendes has experience in both stage and screen.
Yes.
So I think he would actually be a very good... I was thinking about either him or Andy Serkis, but I think Mendes would make the better choice because he has theatrical experience. And this is basically a theatrical show.
Interesting.
Go on.
And with Mendes, I think you could also get Roger Deakins attached to this too.
As a producer?
Cinematographer.
I wonder if we could. Yeah, I think Mendes would make a good, because he has experience in both stage and screen. And yes, he can direct a musical. And I think with Roger Deakins, especially the Hellfire scene, that's going to be... Can we all agree? That would be fantastic.
Now, who are you thinking for cast?
Okay. I'm thinking for Quasimodo, Josh Gad. Because he is someone who could be quirky and charming, like Quasi. And he has theatrical experience and Disney experience. Theatrical, he had the experience of Book of Mormon. And he's been Olaf in Frozen. So I think he can have that quirky charmness, but I think he can try and tone it down. Okay, for Esmeralda, I'm having a really hard time butchering her name here. Lou, the chick who did the voice of Moana, I can't pronounce her name.
Okay. That's an interesting choice. I would have thought you would go for a more Romanian actress, but...
Well...
I like it. It's not bad.
Because Hughes... All right. Again, people would probably think, like, why her? Because when she opens her mouth, guess what people are going to hear?
Moana.
If she tries... People are probably going to think, if she tries to sing God Help the Outcast, they're probably going to be hearing her sing How Far I'll Go. But, guys... We should not take a snapshot of someone's work and have that be their homework. Like, yes, she has the Disney-fied, but she's been on stage and she's done darker roles. Like, in 2023, she was in the cast of Evita in London. And she just finished an engagement of being Sally Bowles in Cabaret on Broadway.
Right.
And if you know anything about Cabaret, you know Cabaret is not Moana.
No, and I'm not saying she's not capable of doing the role. I'm saying, why can't we give the role to an actress of Romanian descent? You know,
do you have any suggestions?
I don't, but
I think she would be a good choice because, like I said, I think her vocal wise, she could do it. And I think she could probably play that Romani gypsy thing. And she can. And, like, here's the thing. She... And I want someone young. Because in the book, Esmeralda's about 16. But I want to shoot her maybe, like, a little older. Maybe, like, her early 20s. And I think she would be a very... I think she'd be a very solid choice to be Esmeralda. Now, Captain Phoebus, I'm thinking Liam Hemsworth.
Because I
think he's got that, you know, that shizza. I think he can play someone like Phoebus, the knight in shining armor role. And, okay, I know what you're thinking. Guess who? What I know what you're thinking.
Ian McKellen as Frollo.
Yes. And maybe have at the beginning of the movie Eddie Redmayne play young Frollo.
Ooh.
Because, you know, Eddie Redmayne, you know, because Frollo is young when he adopts, when he finds Quasimodo. So maybe get someone young like Eddie Redmayne, because Bells of Notre Dame does have Frollo's singing part.
Yeah.
And Eddie Redmayne does have musical experience.
He does.
See Cabaret, for examples.
Cabaret, he was in Les Mis.
I forgot he was in Les Mis, that's right.
Yeah. And have Adam Driver as Jahan. Frollo's brother. And have you know, Clopin, you know, who's like the sort of narrator of the film. In the beginning, he's like the king of the gypsies.
Mm-hmm.
Sacha Baron Cohen. What?
Okay, yeah.
Are you sold on that one?
Yeah, that one's good.
And also for Phoebus's fiance, the Irish American actress Saoirse Ronan.
Okay,
that's my cast. What do you gentlemen think?
I like it overall. I like it. Go ahead, Sarah Justin. Go ahead.
That's a pretty stacked cast. What are you thinking about for a budget?
Like $150 million.
Okay.
More, maybe like $100 million might be a little bit better. What do you think, Justin?
Might be able to squeeze $125.
Okay.
$150 might be pushing it a bit.
Okay. Hey, but I wasn't asking for $200 million like someone else was, I heard.
Hey, Tarzan would have been great, all right?
Okay. But, all right, like, what, okay, so that is what I have. So, yeah, maybe we could do $125 million. Do you have any suggestions of what we could do?
I personally do not. Justin, do you have any?
I think maybe one or two of our casting picks, we might go for a regular casting call, like maybe for Phoebus. Like we, yeah, we kind of need to have I think Phoebus and Johan, we could probably just do a casting call for. I don't think we need necessarily to shelve out millions of dollars for those roles.
Okay. Oh, Phoebus and Mina Johan, Frollo's brother.
Yeah.
You know what? I can kind of agree with you there. Johan, because he really doesn't have that much part of the story. He's only really in the first couple minutes. But maybe with Phoebus, maybe we can try to go for someone who we don't have to shell out millions of dollars for. I can't think of anybody, but...
Who are you thinking of? Anyone at all, Justin?
Justin, do you have any suggestions for someone who's...
I mean, Glenn Powell, he'd at least be less expensive than Chris Hemsworth.
Liam Hemsworth, but okay.
Liam Hemsworth.
I think all the Hemsworths are expensive.
I think they are too.
But, okay, we can try Trevor Powell. Johan, we can do a casting call. That's fine.
Yeah.
But what about the rest of the cast?
The rest of the cast sounds pretty good. I still think you might want to consider a more Romani actress for Esmeralda. But
we could look into that, but we do think... God, I am so sorry that I keep not being able to pronounce her name. But I think if we can't find a Romani, I think the I'm sorry I can't pronounce her name.
It's all right.
But I think she could be a very good, solid choice for Esmeralda if we can't find a Romani actress. Hmm. Like, I am into looking for someone more Romani, but I think the girl who played Moana, I think she'd be a very solid choice. Because I think she does have the vocal power, and I think she can, and I think it's very can we agree it's very unfair to typecast her as just Moana?
Yes, it is.
I agree.
And I think, you know, if we can't find anyone Romani, I think that I would like to resort to her as my first choice.
All right.
So, guys, is this greenlit or...
I would greenlight this.
Awesome, JT.
I would too.
Perfect. Okay, so when should we start?
We'll have our people call your people.
Okay, sounds good.
Sounds good.
Sounds good.
And they never heard from each other again.
The end.
No one just saw like, Bill ever again.
Just like most rom-coms. Oh, no, but,
anyway. This was fun.
This is a good topic. Justin, good job tonight. This is a good, very good show that we did.
Thank you. We should do this again sometime at something else.
We definitely should. And, and for those who don't know, we do the show live Wednesday night EST on YouTube. But we also, I will say this too. We have, for those of you who keep track at home, when we they're probably saying, how many more topics do they have? We have at least 30 to 40, maybe even 50 other topics that we haven't even gotten to yet that we've had on our docket for years. Even parts 1 through 5 of stuff. It's crazy. So, yeah. But anyways, that's going to do it for us, guys. Thanks so much for watching, listening, enjoying our podcast. I want to thank the two esteemed panelists, Bill. Thank you much for doing this podcast with me, as always.
Always a pleasure.
Justin. Bravo tonight, my friend. You did a great job with this podcast. Awesome job. Great episode. But yeah, and we want to thank you for watching us and however you enjoy us tonight. Thanks so much for tuning into our podcast. Always don't forget to follow us on our social media page as well. Simply at the Super View Show, Facebook and Instagram. Bill, you have a sports something.
Sports Insanity podcast on the Sports Insanity Network. March Madness just wrapped up. We got the Masters coming up. We got baseball's in. Baseball is back. We got the NFL draft coming up in a couple weeks, so check us out. We are on all platforms. Yeah, you know what? Yeah.
He's wearing his Yankees hat here because we're
JT, where's your hat?
He didn't get the memo.
My Yankee Stadium bobblehead is over there, and so is the popcorn container, too. Just saying. So, anyways. That's going to do it for us, guys. Thanks so much for watching and listening to our podcast. Don't forget to follow us on our social media pages as well as simply Instagram and Facebook, simply at The Super View Show. But yeah, for all of us here at The Super View Show, stay safe.
Take care.
And
be awesome.
Be awesome.